Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keith McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, my website at half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. This week on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast, we have the content director for Elite Prospects, Cam Robinson, to talk all about Will Smith, the upcoming Frozen Four, the San Jose Sharks prospects, and a little bit about the 2024 NHL draft.
Can I interrupt you here too? We have another, another contrary opinion because Cam, if you might remember in January, put out a tweet that said that he believes that Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault will be better than Will Smith.
Yeah, we dive all into that opinion and see if it's changed at all.
We asked him, 40 points later, do you still think that, Cam? So
leading the NCAA in scoring, do you still think that, Cam? It's a great interview. Honestly, one of my favorites that we've done this season. Check it out, guys. It'll be up here in just a minute. But before then, we're going to cover a few of the games that happened since we last talked with you guys. We're going to cover a hat trick for William Eklund, Devin Cooley's first NHL win, and Graf's debut all in one game. We're going to speak a little bit about Luke Cunnan, the AHL debut for Filip Bystad, although we'll have more on that coming up this season. Finally, before the Cam Robinson interview, we're going to have a talk about Shane got some scouts' opinions on the top 10 prospects list from a few weeks ago. So all of that and more on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast.
Oh, and actually, I want to keep teasing this Cam interview because we were talking about it before. Clickbait alert. Cam thinks that there might be a Shark prospect that's actually better than Will Smith. So clickbait alert, guys. Clickbait.
It's me. it's a little bit of clickbait, but this has been a good week.
It's not clickbait. It's Cam actually said it.
He did. You're right. It's not clickbait. It's more like a headliner. You know, it's like an actual thing that happened. So it's not clickbait. It's just in a contrary opinion, which is interesting.
We had Pierre last week, so it's 2 weeks of contrary opinions. Next week, though, just another tease, we have a guest that is not a contrary opinion, and so we're excited for that guest too. And that interview is already in the books and all that stuff. So anyway, so let's carry on this week, though.
He's in the solidly my career apologist camp that we have next week. All right. I'm wearing a jersey this week because it was, I don't know, like the feel good story of the San Jose Sharks season, I think this week happened. So that's why I'm wearing a jersey. Eklund scores in overtime to complete a hat trick against St. Louis, and Devin Cooley gets his first win, and Colin Graf makes his NHL debut all on the same night. Chang, what are your thoughts about that game other than it was amazing and it was good for a win?
Doesn't make the whole season worth it, but I think though a big theme after the story, and something I asked William, I asked David Quintus too, that it's something that kind of shows you what it can be again, right? At SAP Center. Granted, it wasn't quite a sellout, but it was still a pretty good crowd, close to a sellout, 15,000-16,000. It was a giveaway game. That's why there's that many people there, let's be honest. That's why there's all those hats on the ice, because that's what they were giving away. But crowd was into it, though. Obviously, anytime there's an overtime goal, that's exciting. It's an overtime hat trick, doubly exciting, triple exciting. That's William Eklund, who's sort of the kind of the lone hope all year for the Sharks, all season with the Sharks, right? Because obviously, Bortolo has been up and down. Thuron has spent time in the minors. Mooka Madulin's only been here for a couple of games. Gushin has been here for a couple of games. Short Gushin aside, I am working on that Gushin-Russia story. I'll just say I'm not terribly worried about it, but I'm working on it to get something definite for you guys. Just so you know, I've seen your tweets, and I'm not ignoring him. Anyway, though, so on that game itself, though, the St. Louis game. I think that was great. It was kind of a reward in some way. And of course, he earned it, but a reward for William after such a long, hard season. I was curious. I looked up last time he had a hat trick. Elite prospect game logs don't go past 2018-19, and there's no hat trick up to there. So it must have been when he was like 13 or 14. I actually asked his dad because I was curious, and his dad doesn't remember too. His dad said maybe 6 years ago in a very like low level, like, you know, junior Swedish juniors. I mean, elite for his age then, but like, sure, obviously low level compared to the NHL. So yeah, 5-6 years maybe.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's been a long time for William and a hat trick. So not recorded. So so anyway, and I think that for William, it's just confirmation of kind of what we've seen, that this guy is indeed a building block. I don't mm-hmm. know, and we're gonna have this this discussion with a fun surprise guest in the future about sort of a William Eklund ceiling, and I don't know if it's going to be what, you know, I don't know if he's going to be like the best player on a good team. I don't think so. But like, is he a really, really good player? Yes. And it's not just because of, even though the offense is sort of what gets the headlines, right, and gets everybody excited. As I mentioned in what I wrote after the game, not only does he have this sort of offensive potential and he's mm-hmm. And whatnot, right, but he also is always tries to play defense, you know, play with a defensive conscience. He plays inside. You know, he seems dedicated to the sport and getting better. And also too, William has showed a lot of mental toughness this year. Just, this has been a really, really hard season. I remember I did a story with him a few months ago. I really actually enjoyed talking to him about this, where he said like, yeah, this isn't that hard, because the worst thing was getting relegated, yep, from the SHL to Allsvenskan on my yep. hometown team. As yeah. a literal teenager, so a couple of years ago, and so that was like the hardest. That was the hardest thing he's gone through as an athlete, and so, you know, this is almost not, because at least the Sharks aren't relegated. They should be, but they're not. So
yeah,
so
yeah.
Anyway,
I really enjoy the growth. It's hard to hard because we're getting kind of wrapped up in you know, Eklund putting up 40 points, get the hat trick. But this is his first NHL season, really. Like, he's had little debuts, cups of coffee or whatever, but this is it. And the growth in all like aspects of his game, he's turned into an actual dual threat, you know, offensive player. He's evolved his shot tremendously from when he was in Sweden. His willingness to shoot more specifically than even just like the power on his shot and all that. And he's always like working hard. It's very rare that you see Eklund taking a game off, taking a shift off. He's working out there, even if things aren't going his way. He's had up and downs. It's just the growth is what you want to see. And I agree. I think Eklund's going to be a good top six forward. And that's exactly what the Sharks needed from the number 7 overall in 2021. Like, that's exactly what they need, was a productive top six forward. And that's what he's going to be. And somebody that you're just going to root for every time you see him. And that's all that matters.
Right. And speaking of somebody to root for, Devin Cooley, obviously, congratulations, Devin, such a great family moment. You know, he had a lot of family in the stands, friends, family. I think after the game was really great in a hallway. I think I saw his mom playing mini sticks with maybe grandkids or something like that. And that was just a great moment to kind of walk by and see. It's just a feel good story. I'm glad that Devin was able to get that, his first NHL win, and at home of all things too. And that's the kind of the cherry on the top. And obviously, yep, as you guys have mentioned, Devin is so great in post game interviews, just so much excitement mm-hmm. and openness too, in terms of talking about just the game itself, his own mistakes and what he sees out there and what he's learning about goaltending. And yeah, so he's such a magnetic presence. And so, yeah, I honestly, you know, people ask me like, what's going to happen with him? I don't know. I don't know for sure. I'm obviously, next year the Sharks are lined up with Blackwood and Vanecek. Maybe Devin can be sort of that, that NHL number 3 goalie, but that's a little bit of a stretch, obviously, because he's never actually done it, like, you know, like mm-hmm. Aaron Dell or whatever, right? He's never actually done it, but it'd be great if the story does continue here with the Barracuda, and he can keep sort of refining his game. I mean, there's a chance he's a late bloomer. You know, there's a reason why Nashville did sign him to a contract a few years ago, and so we'll see.
Yeah, it just makes so much sense to have a little bit more goaltending depth for this organization. It's somebody that just wants to be here, clearly, and wants to play here, and just is so, you know, like certain guys that you watch in post game interviews, you're like, I think this guy is eventually going to coach hockey. Cooley reminds me of that, like in a way that, like, I think he'll eventually be a goaltending coach, something like that. I just, the way that he speaks is very insightful and very open about his experience and stuff like that. And that's rare.
He might be better on TV, actually, because I think a lot of goalies, even like, they may not be great in interviews, like public interviews, because obviously the cameras are on them and they may be camera shy, or they don't want to like give away their secrets to like the rest of the world. But I think Devin actually might have a future on TV. Like, I think we've enjoyed when Jason Demers, JD, has been on the Sharks broadcast, right? Because he's just so, he's just so JD, and it's so effervescent out, right?
Sure.
And maybe Devin can do that in the future. And I think that'd be great.
Yeah. But I'm excited. I think I don't know. We'll see what happens with him, obviously, in the summer, but I think they keep him around. And I think he'll be kind of that AHL goaltender, maybe call up throughout the season if you need to, for injuries and stuff like that. So I like him. Good win. Graf made his NHL debut, and his next game he got a point, actually. Not that game, but the one, the loss against the Coyotes last night. He you know, obviously making his debut from the NCAA. It's a big change from NCAA hockey, even at the highest level that he was playing at, to the NHL. But he's holding his head above water. I think he's doing all right. Picked up that point. He's got some playmaking skill that I can see. I think people have commented on his feet being a little slow for right now. Probably both of those things are true. But
yeah. I think he's been okay. You know, I think that for the most part, I think defensively he's been decent. He carries out there defensively, I think, which is good. Mm-hmm. That's a start. I wouldn't pencil him into the lineup next year. I think that he probably can use some time, a lot of time in a Barracuda. He definitely needs to work on the strength aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's sort of surviving so far, but this is like end of season hockey. This is like St. Louis scratching Torrey Krug and Kevin Hayes and stuff like that. You know, teams are kind of not throwing their very best out there, or they'll start doing that at least, right? And they did start doing that this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of end of season hockey. And I wouldn't pencil him in the lineup, but there's things to like. There's promise in his game. I think it'll be good for him to kind of work it out. Unless he has an incredible summer, which he might have. I think it'll be good for him to work that out down with the CUDA, most likely.
The interesting bit is he's had such a late growth spurt, right? Like, he was 5'9" a few years ago, and now he's 6'1". I think he was 5'9" in his draft year, if I remember right. And which is very rare for just men in general to grow that much after they're 17, 18. So it's interesting to...
He is 5'9", like 16. I don't know. It doesn't matter, though. He's had a big growth spurt, so yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, he may have been taller in his draft year. I can't remember. But but anyway, it's very rare. So I think he's still growing into that frame, for sure. He looks lanky. He looks like not as built as he could be.
He's light. Light. He's too light for, like, winning NHL hockey.
So he needs some time. So
he's time, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
So I want everybody not to be mad if he's in the Barracuda next year and everybody's gonna freak out, but try not to freak out, guys.
It's okay.
Or you surprise us and he's got a great summer. And then
I hope so.
I agree. Lastly, we had a little bit of talk about Luke Cunnan, who's had a couple of headlines. I feel like it's just every game they're like, Luke Cunnan, I love that guy. And I wonder why that's happening.
It's Luke Cunnan week, I guess.
Luke Cunnan week. Somebody's agent slipping in like talk up Luke Cunnan. He's up for a contract. Talk him up. You like that guy? You want him around? You know?
Funny enough, his agent liked a couple of my tweets. Willie Mecklin talking up Cunnan's leadership, but David Quinn too. It's just a coincidence, guys. I know that there's probably people out there who think that the media were pushing this Luke Cunnan narrative because I don't know, like we have some narrative we're trying to push. Honestly, just how the games have shaped themselves this past weekend, right? Or this past weekend and the LA game too, because we talked to Luke after the LA game also. I think though that this weekend sort of shows you what Luke can do for a team, right? And obviously, he hasn't done it all season. I understand that, but it's a bad team. It's obviously it's hard to stand out, right? And no one is saying he's like Mikael Granlund, that he should be on a top six on this team. He shouldn't be your second line center. There's no doubt about that. But if that guy is on your third or fourth line and he's at wing where he should be probably, and he's popping in 10 to 15 goals. I know he's only at 9 this year, but historically his rate is about in the 15 range or something like that, right? Maybe a little less than that. And he's hit a lot of posts this year too. He actually leads the Sharks in that category, post crossbars, I'm pretty sure. And so I wonder, I mentioned this in one of my stories, that if a couple of those posts had gone in, would you guys have a different opinion about him? Some of you guys, or if he had maybe scored on one of those chances that William Eklund set him up for early season, would you have a different opinion on him, right? Maybe he's up to 12 goals now instead of 9, and you think, okay, there is a third, fourth liner there. Besides that, obviously, like, he's not here specifically for his goal scoring. I do think that when Mike Weir brought him in, I think that they were hoping for a little more goal scoring. Because for a couple of years there, his scoring rate, I think his last year in Minnesota to his first year in Nashville, was actually at a 20-goal pace. And so I think they were maybe hoping that there was a middle six winger in here. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't shock me if he did have a season like that. But yeah, there's maybe not a second-line winger in there like they were hoping, right? But even nonetheless, still, though, a third or fourth liner, a guy that is a good penalty killer, that can play center sometimes and not embarrass you out there. I mean, they won games with him at center, right? And they've, you know, so they've done, you know, they've survived with him at center. Obviously, he shouldn't be your center, and they're an 18-win team. So let's not talk him up at center too much. But you know, he can do a passable job there. He can play net front on power play. He has a pretty good shot, right? He gets a chance. I mean, a lot of those shots, like, they just ring off the post. I mean, he has a good shot. I think that he can play the role of sort of like a finisher, but on a lower line. Obviously not a finisher on a top six line, but if you build like a construct the perfect third, fourth line, he could be the guy that kind of, you know, kind of scores a little bit, be it from the slot or just putting in the garbage goals, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously it's not even bringing in the physicality aspect, and we saw direct examples of his physicality leading to power plays for the Sharks, right, this past weekend, right? Like when he St. Louis, when he hit Jake Neighbors, and that was a clean hit, I think, and got Justin Falk to start a fight. Falk got the instigator. Eklund scores a power play goal right off of that. That's direct impact, right? And then against the Coyotes, right, that was a board on Travis Dermott. He got away with one. There's no doubt about that, right? Yeah. I'm not questioning that. He should have been penalized for that. But nonetheless, though, there's no call. Luke keeps playing. The Coyotes, obviously Dermott, I don't know if Dermott is dazed. I hope Dermott is okay. But Dermott doesn't cover Cunning. Cunning's open. Henry Tonn finds him. Goal. So you see the direct correlation of that physicality to something good happening on the ice. The problem with Luke here is that he is sort of, let's see, like second line center. So he's considered like on this Sharks team, he's being used as if he's like the, I don't know, like the fourth or fifth best forward on the Sharks or whatever, right?
Yes, our own Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But that's not, again, that's not his fault. You know, on a proper team, he should be like your ninth best forward or something like that. Yeah. And so if you can sort of push him down there, and, you know, the fights, you love his willingness to engage, his willingness for the moment too. The St. Louis fight, the Sharks were kind of not, you know, they were kind of playing dead in the water a little bit, right? I think St. Louis, the first period, St. Louis dominated shots. Sharks started coming on in the second period in that game, but they still, you know, it still was 0-0. Sharks maybe needed a shot of energy. Luke takes that fight with Falk right in front of the Sharks bench, and that's on purpose. You know, that's let everybody see it. You know, get the team going. It got the team going, right? And then yesterday, I know there's some debate that maybe Luke should take that fight after he hits Dermott. You know, there's like the code and all that stuff, right? And there's an argument for that. But in Luke's defense, and I like there's a discernment. It's not he's trying to fight at every opportunity like a Matt Rempe or whatever, right? That it's 2-2. At that point, the Sharks are actually playing pretty well in that game, right? So why kind of you know, the Sharks are tilting momentum anyway, with, you know, with or without a fight. And it's not that Luke won't fight a big guy, right? Like in LA, the LA game, that's part of the reason why we talked with Luke, because it's sort of a boring game. And Luke fought Andreas Englund, who's huge, 6'4". Mm-hmm. He's the same size as Josh Brown. So it's not, it's not like that. And so anyway, I guess my final thought about Luke is all these things he brings, right? Leadership and some ability to score. Again, no one's saying he's a big goal scorer, but if you compare him to other sort of like enforcer guys in the past, and not that he's enforced, he's more of like a middleweight, obviously, with his size, right? But he has the heart of a heavyweight. There's no doubt about that, right? The heart of an enforcer. And if you compare him to guys like that, Luke is actually quite a good player with all the element he brings compared to, you know, he's no, like, I don't know, Adam Burrish or just the fighter type like Jody Shelley, right? And obviously he's not heavyweight like Jody Shelley, obviously. So it's a different role. So it's a little unfair to compare him to guys like that in the past to some ways, you know. Sure. But yeah, I think, you know, sort of like I don't know, like a little bit of a poor man's Ryan Clough, maybe, right? And that's a very valuable player, though. That's a player that everybody would want on a team. And I final thought about it in terms of his contract. I know he's an RFA, and I know there's some debate about, you know, is he overpaid? And I think he is overpaid at $3 million. But I think, though, the Sharks can't afford an overpayment as long as they're not signing him to like a 6-year contract, which they won't, you know. So if you sign him to like three, if you just qualify him and you sign him to like a 3-year contract at around the same amount, right? I think that's a little bit of overpayment, but you can. For all the elements that he brings, and you don't want to lose that. I think that's all good for a team like the Sharks that will have a lot of cap space for a year or two. Like, he's great. I think he's really good for the room. One thing that I'm gonna follow up on a little bit is I wonder how much more he stepped up now. Hurdle's gone and Couture injured again, so Couture's not around as much. It seems like he has really kind of embraced and stepped up into. He was a leader before. Maybe a leader by example more so before, but now maybe he's taking a little more of a, well, I'm wearing an A now and I've got to be a little louder. I've got to be whatever. Like, it seems like he's embraced that. And so I think he's super valuable for a rebuilding team. I have almost no doubt they're going to bring it back. I mean, he's affordable and he does so many things. Yeah, he's a guy that you shouldn't. If you want to build a harder play against team, there's no reason to let a guy like this go. And that's something that I'm going to tease for a future episode. I've thought a lot about this, and I can identify a huge mistake, I think, that Mike Greer made last year that kind of indicates what it's sort of a crossroads for what wrong with this team this year, like why they're so bad. We know they're going to be bad, but why they're so bad, so easy to play against. So anyway, that's another future episode. So,
My thoughts are similar. I think Luke Cunningham is a fourth line NHL forward, a good fourth line NHL forward, and one that you want on your team because of all the stuff that he brings on and off the ice. And he's just paid like a third line NHL forward, and he's playing on a second line. So everybody kind of get, they pick a scapegoat every year for like a guy that's playing too high in the lineup, that's making too much money, and then they point out that they don't like him. Yeah. And Luke Cunningham's that guy this year. So I don't know. This is what he is to be. I think he is overpaid, but you're right. I think we don't have anybody that does that kind of physical thing on the ice and actually I don't know what the right word is. Leaves it all out there most nights.
He's a great example for the guys in a room. I mean, exactly. You don't want William Eklund to fight. You don't want Henry to fight, literally, but you want them to have that fighting attitude, that fighting spirit, right? Yep. And I think he brings that, especially the guys that are maybe in between, you know, like prospects like that. Like, he can teach a Colin Graf that, who's learning that, right? Thomas Bortolo that. I think that's so valuable. I actually think on a good team, he can be a third line forward, but he should be probably like the third best forward on your third line. So,
yeah.
So,
but yeah, he also he has an issue with finishing this year. But he's shown in the past that he's got a little bit better.
He's got a little finishing. More, right? I mean, that's, so. Like I said, the posts are indication of first getting a lot of chances, and also, hey, 1 inch one way, that's a goal, right? So,
yeah. I will be curious what they do with his contract. They very likely will qualify him. And obviously,
I don't think they'll risk it. Yeah.
But I wonder if they do kind of go 3-year deal, lower AAV than $3 million, something like that.
Like 7.5 or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Give him a little security, but
keep the AAV a little lower.
A little lower. Right. Yeah. And I think that's fair. He's young actually. Yeah. So he's like 26 now, young. I think. Right. Yeah. So
he's 26. Young.
Yeah, 2017 first round pick. So.
Yeah, he's not the worst. He's not the problem with the Sharks. I'll say that. He's not the problem.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
And his $2.5 million contract won't be the problem either. If they sign into a $4.5 million deal, and then I'll be like, why are we doing this? there's no reason. But yeah, then you got to think like somebody like Zetterlund's making $1.5 million, and he's worth more than $1.5 million right now. So it all balances out, and we have a ton of cap space anyway. So
right.
Good on Cunning. Two more things before we get to the Cam Robinson interview. Philip Bystedt made his AHL debut coming over from Sweden. And he made it with a bang. Two goals and an assist. Looked like he was flying out there. He played two other games I haven't been able to watch yet, but I think we both watched that debut game and he was flying. he looked like a guy that was just excited to play on that ice surface and finally make it over to North America. And I don't know, he showed an interesting upside. I'll say that.
Yeah, a little bit like right place, right time. Like his second goal, it was nice though. He was able to pull it back. Like it was the pass was off a little bit, but because he's so long, he was able to pull it back and stuff it in. So a little bit of skill there. So yep. I'm actually going to watch him Wednesday. They're back at home, I'll get a good live watch on him, and I'll have a better perspective on Philip. And so I think next week when we talk, I'll have a better sense because, I think watching off of AHL video is a little tough. I'm excited to see him live, see what he can bring.
Yeah, I'm going to attempt to do another little breakdown article like I did for Buka Badulin when he came over last year on some of Bystedt's games. So going to be a fun article.
Yeah, I would not pencil him into the lineup next year. So just so you guys know.
He also needs some time.
I think he needs some time too. So
still 2022.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, he was always projected as like, this is a long-term deal.
A little bit of a project, right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's always been since he was drafted, like needs time to put everything together. So. Yeah. All right. Speaking of prospects, wow, this is a good transition. Philip Bystedt's in this list. This is your top 10 prospect list from a few weeks ago. We both did ours. You should go watch that episode.
Yeah, we did our podcast. Yeah, a couple weeks ago, like you mentioned. Yeah, our dueling list,
which ended up being very similar towards the end. But just to give you a quick reminder, I guess the list that you have is Kasper Altonen at 10, Cam Lund at 9, Bordalo at 8, Gushchin at 7, Henry Thun 6, Philip Bystedt 5, Edstrom 4, Musty 3, Mukko Badula 2, Will Smith 1, just to give an overview.
Right. I reached out to a number of scouts before we did our podcast and after too, to talk about just some of my burning questions from my list. Mm-hmm. This story that's out on, you can find it on San Jose Hockey Now and also on NBC Sharks, is scout opinions. If you remember from the podcast itself, I kind of was, I didn't give away what the scouts were telling me. It was just mostly my opinion, right? But they had a lot of interesting opinions, and I was curious about a number of questions. I didn't necessarily follow everything that they said, I wondered, like, who would they choose, Haltonen or Lund, because I had them 10-9. Who was their number two prospect, Mukko Badulin or Musty? Obviously, I chose Mukko Badulin, but I know that there's a lot of fans and people who think that Musty would be your number two. And so I was curious what they thought about Musty specifically and Mukko Badulin. Since we released that podcast, obviously the Sharks signed Colin Graf. And so I wondered where they might have Graf in the top 10 if he is in the top 10. And also too, guys that missed my top 10, that just missed it, guys like Cardwell and Cagnoni, what they thought of those guys. And so I think there's a lot of interesting opinions on there, so we're not going to give it all away here. But I know that you guys are would be curious, though, what Keegan himself thought of what the scout said, because Keegan obviously is the resident prospects guru here. So what did you think of what the scout said?
Hey, just to toot my own horn, they said exactly what I was thinking. A couple of them did. Some of them mentioned a few things that stood out. The compete level for Cam Lund, somebody mentioned being a little bit lacking. Somebody mentioned he had a good step this year, but still has a lot to do on the defensive side of the puck. That was all basically what I saw whenever I watched Cam Lund. And he has an opportunity to be the guy next year because everybody's moving on for Northeastern. And we'll have to see how much progression, but he's still a project. And I think I had him at 11 instead of in the top 10. And I think I switched in with Cagnoni for the top 10, which Cagnoni was an interesting one that your scouts brought up. Somebody was like, he's a stud. He's really fucking good, which is actually a quote.
But from he's the number list. 11, though.
But he's 11. And then they were like, really fucking good. Also, He's tiny.
He's tiny.
It just doesn't move the needle, one other scout said. But ceiling is Kalen Addison, which is a...
Sorry, Sharks fans.
Interesting. I think that... When
I've seen him, I just... I don't... I just... He just doesn't... like I said, like, I don't... I just... He just doesn't have that sort of that dynamic, that sort of like a Hudson or something for a guy that size, right? Mm-hmm. I don't quite see that. And I just don't know how that's going to translate. Like how he's going to escape NHL pressure.
I push back on the whole... I push back on the whole ceiling is Kalen Addison thing, though. I think if you're talking, like, actual ceiling, it's, like, Sam Girard instead of, like, you know... And that's, like, really if he hits. Not that he will be Sam Girard, but, like, that's what you're looking for is a smaller, offensively gifted, smart hockey player.
Sure.
And that could fit into your middle pairing. Mm-hmm. That's, like, his ceiling for me, but I don't think it's very, very likely that he hits it just because of all of the other factors, like you're mentioning. He's not very dynamic. He doesn't have amazing skill in his size, and that's not going to change, so... And it's not like he plays a physical game for his size either. And those guys typically struggle when they get to a physical game. It's like, it's not like he at 5'8" is able to muscle people off the puck really right now. Anyway,
right. He's not going to be Jared Spurgeon. So, okay. Yeah. Probably not, at least unless he develops that side of it. And so, okay. So he's going to survive in pro hockey off of his offense, which is fine. You can do it. You mentioned Sam Girard has done it, right? Other players have done it. I know I've seen comps online, like Dan Boyle, right? Guys have done it at his size. I'm not saying it's not just the size thing. I guess I want to make that clear. I just don't see that factor that will allow him to literally separate in the NHL from checks, from all that sort of thing that a Sam Girard has. I don't see that. And you admit that the Girard ceiling is unlikely. So if he doesn't hit that, who is he? He's Kalen Addison.
Yeah. But that's the difference between, like, most realistic projection, Kalen Addison. Or maybe even a little bit higher than what is likely is Kalen Addison. Very high ceiling.
No, you're fair. No, it's right. It's right. That scout just didn't like him very much. I don't know what to say. So, yeah.
I'm just saying that I want people to...
opinions of guys.
Yeah, and again, I think Cagnoni is a stud. I think he's a great junior hockey player right now. And he's very smart. He's very fast, sneakily fast for somebody who is so small.
But again, translate though, right? Fast for that level, maybe even fast for AHL, but
mostly
fast for NHL.
He's young. Give him time.
Yeah, no, it's fair. It's fair. I know this is all projection and they could be wrong. Scouts are wrong a lot. I could be wrong. Happy to be wrong. I see people projecting Cagnoni as like the Sharks' future PP1 quarterback. I'd be thrilled if that happened. He's really good and you can throw it in my face. That's great.
It'd be great.
I want to see these prospects hit. I want to watch good hockey. I really want to watch good hockey. I don't care about being right or my sources being right or stuff. You know, my sources are wrong sometimes. Famously, I shouldn't overstate it, but Reddit famously, because I've seen it in a couple of places, there was a scout that said that there would be no 10 goal scorers from the Timo Meier trade that the Sharks received from the Devils. Obviously, Damian Zetterlund has doubled that, right? Yeah. And then Quentin Musty should you know, that's a realistic sort of ceiling for him too, or a realistic bar for him to hit double digit goals. So obviously that scout didn't know that they would draft Musty at the time. So he was talking about the literal the known players in that trade. But so scouts are wrong all the time. It's just what they see at that moment. That scout wasn't a big Fabian Zetterlund fan. This one scout is obviously not a big I almost said Kalen Addison.
It's not like he or she is like totally incorrect either. It's just realistic, I think.
It's in the range, yeah. And then there's other scouts in that story that seem to like Luca a little bit more. And that's also in the range too. And you had him in your top 10, right? And
I think it was 10th. So it's not like he's super high.
But you like him a little more.
People to remember that a fourth round pick turning into Kalen Addison is actually a super
really good. Even really like Colin Graf turns out to be people hate the Kevin LeBanc comparison. Kevin LeBanc was a sixth round pick who averaged half a point at the NHL level before this year for like 6 years running. That's really, really good for a sixth round pick.
Yeah.
And if Colin Graf is Kevin LeBanc offensive potential with a better defensive conscience, which people say Graf has, right? And he's shown kind of glimpses of it in a couple games he's played here. That's a really good player. Like that could be like your seventh best player on like a playoff team or something like that. That's really valuable. And so don't chuck that away because, oh, he's not Nikita Kucherov. Like you mentioned, he's not Steven Stamkos. He's not Clayton Keller. He's not whatever, like the highest, he's not John Tavares. He's whatever. Right. You don't need to be – a team is not made up of nine Austin Matthews, obviously. And so you need a lot of the – you know, if Willem Eklund turns out to be like your third best forward on a playoff team, which maybe that's about where I see him at least, right? That's perfectly fine. That's a really valuable player. If Thomas Brolo ends up being like your sixth best forward on a playoff team, great. You know, that's a great pick for a second round pick. And things like that. Not everybody has to be a first line, all that stuff. So, yeah. So
same thoughts that I've always had to speak about. The next guy on your list is Ethan Cardwell. Is that I've mentioned this dozen times probably, is that ever since he was in juniors, I liked the way that he played in a NHL projectability sense. Mm. Not like he had a ton of offensive potential, but he had some and enough to survive in juniors and actually do really well. But it's just a projectable game that he played. And he's kind of showing it this year as like a surprise Barracuda rookie where he's got the most goals, I think, still. Or maybe Gushchev overtook him now. I don't know. But he just plays a game that molds into a bottom six forward in the NHL level. And that's something to be excited about for an overage fourth round pick. But people get mad. They're like, well, what do you mean? He's just a bottom six. I'm like, yeah, but you need to fill out a lineup with these guys for free, or else your team will never get better. And that's
where there is a good bottom six player and there are bad bottom six players. There are bottom six players that are only in your lineup because your team is bad and you just need to fill out the lineup with somebody, right? And there are good ones who are valuable. Luke Cunningham is a good, valuable bottom six player on a playoff team. Yeah. He is. That's why he has the reputation that he has and he makes the money that he does, even if he is overpaid, which I think he is, his AAV, but that's why he's gotten where he has in his career. And so if Cardwell goes in the Cunning direction, then that's a hit. That's maybe not a huge hit, but that's a hit of a draft pick for sure.
Yep.
And that's a very, very valuable player. And so if Ethan Cardwell ends up being like your ninth best, 10th best, eighth best forward on a playoff team, that's tremendous.
And that's how
you build a winning team.
So that's what one scout said. I think he's a versatile third line right winger that can help on both special teams, which is
More than Haltonen and Lund. So he's in that conversation. So
yeah, he needs more time, but but I think that the main thing to think about prospecting is not everybody's going to be a first liner, but some people have roles that they fill at the NHL level, and we've mentioned this all the time. The role thing is really important.
Fill it well or fill it badly, right?
Yeah,
so there's a difference, right? Yeah. So
yeah. Let's see. Brun was interesting because one scout said that they move him down a few spots.
Yeah, it's ceiling. I think some people just, sometimes you know, the way I did my rankings, it's not like a sort of like tried and true with everybody. Like with some guys, I did a little more upside in my decision. Like Lund being number 9 is a little more of an upside. His tools, he can skate better than a Haltonen, right? I was actually surprised by how much the scouts liked Haltonen's years. So credit to Casper there. Mm-hmm. So with Thrun, I think it's a little bit of the, you know, the certainty of who he's going to be, his maturity too. And I like him as, I think he can be a number 4, maybe a 5, but I think he can be a number 4. And obviously he can play at this level already. And so there's a little more of that certainty. And so that's why I had him a little higher, but I can get that the ceiling though is not as easy. Yeah. You know, it's not like a Mukhmu Doolin where Mukhmu Doolin has so many tools and he's clearly going to be a clear-cut middle pairing. And I think Mukhmu Doolin can even see as a number 2, I think. But maybe I'm a little too high on him. That's why I think my sources or the scouts had Thrun a little bit lower. So
yeah, the last little bit of this list here was a discussion of Bystad over Edström, Edström over Bystad. Edström, one scout said Edström could be closer to a 3 or 4C. Bystad is a 2.5/3C. I think everybody's kind of like just holding out hope that Bystad's got the second line center built into him. And it's going to be many years before we figure out if that's the case or not.
And okay, and again, Edstrom's the same point though. Like there's a difference between everyone, you know, people might freak out, oh my God, you traded Tomáš Hurdle for a fourth line center. There is a good fourth line center. There is like, true, Nico Sturm or like Nick Bonino in his prime.
Yeah.
Or there's guys that don't belong in the NHL. I don't want to pick on a guy, but like say like Joe Shellman, right? Just the name.
Dylan Gambrell.
Right? Dylan Gambrell was not good enough for that. Frederick Handemark, right? Another guy just throwing out some names from a recent past, right? Those are examples of guys that aren't able to cut it. And there's a big difference between a Joel Shellman and a Nico Sturm or a Dylan Gambrell and a Nick Bonino in his prime. And so, like it's huge. It's huge. And so Pittsburgh doesn't win a Stanley Cup if it's Dylan Gambrell as a 3C.
Yeah.
They don't.
Their 4C. I don't even know who their 4C was that year, but they probably.
Maybe they could have carried him as a 4C. maybe. But yeah, I don't know. But definitely not as a 3C. And Dylan, no offense to Dylan, but yeah, Dylan was forced, not Dylan's fault. Dylan was forced into 3C, I think the 2020-21 season. And so,
I think Dylan got over 200 NHL games, if I remember right.
He did. Yeah, he did.
He's still kicking around too.
Yeah. Dylan's a really nice guy. So I don't want to pick on him, but like, it's just give you an example, like just for you guys to see, like on the ice, we can see what a good 3C is and what a good 3C isn't, right? And so it's such a difference. So if David Edström ends up as that's what people talk about. He's going to be, not that he's going to be able to play three, masquerade as that NHL, but actually be a, you know, the ceiling is a good 3C. That is so important to a playoff team. A guy will play 15 minutes a night, kill penalties, can chip in some points, maybe chip in 30 points for you. So valuable. So valuable.
Lastly was a discussion about what we had talked about, Musty over Mukhmu Doolin or Mukhmu Doolin over Musty. Someone said Mukhmu Doolin's more valuable. He's proven at the pro level. He's a long 2-way D.
That was my argument, yeah.
Yeah, and then he also said that same scout was a little guarded on Musty. There's some immaturities there, is what he said, or she. Want to see him do it pro first. Big and talented kid for sure. Still have some doubts about how he translates. Then your other scout had Musty over Mukhmu Doolin.
Likes him, yeah.
Likes him a lot. Musty has a chance to be a legit, dominant scoring winger, high skill. I'd give him the edge, even though he liked Mukhmu Doolin too.
That's a selling pick, yeah, for sure, yeah. So, this time this year, I could be very wrong. So we'll see.
I mean, I said the same thing though. It was very close.
Yeah,
for
it was
me.
Closer for you. Yeah, it wasn't as close for me, but it was closer for you for sure. You did say that.
Yeah, I was very close between the two because I really liked a lot of what Musty's done to really separate himself from the pack of the rest of the offensive prospects besides Will Smith, so it was hard to really choose between the two. But still going Mukhmu Doolin, I think, as of now. Nothing's changed in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Other than Musty is, you know, still doing well in the playoffs. So,
Oh, for me, Bortolo moved up, obviously, mm-hmm. Because of how well he's played. Does Bortolo move up for you if you do a read list? And does Graf hit your top 10?
I think Graf doesn't hit the top 10, okay. I think, for me. I think he's around that. I think he'd probably be 12 or 13, I think. Okay. It would be, because I have Lund at 11, I think. It's tough. He might be 11 ahead, but I don't want to push Lund too far. So I'd have to look at it, but he'd be in that 11 to 15 range.
Yeah, okay, that category.
And then, okay. Then Bortolo, I think I had...
Bortolo, who'd you have? You had him at...
Gushin at 7 or 8, and then Bortolo right behind him. That's tough.
I know you love your Daniil, but...
I do love my
Daniil. Bortolo's put up some good tape, so he's had some rough games too, but he's put up a lot of good tape, I think, last
week. I think I would put Bortolo ahead as of now, which is strange for me to say because I've been on the Gushin ahead of Bortolo since the beginning of the year. And a lot of it bared out for me that Christian was the better prospect. But right now, there's something to be said about the way that he's playing in the NHL and how he's adapted his game. It makes his odds of succeeding in the NHL like way higher than it was before.
Oh, actually,
even if it's spring hockey, like Bortolo is playing an NHL game. Physically, he's not getting pushed off the puck. He's looking good.
He's inviting contact. He's waiting for the contact, and he's
always had a really good lower. Yeah, he's always had a good lower frame, and he's using that to actually, even at his size, which is exactly what you need. And he's adapted to not being like I'm the hotshot guy, you know. And I like that.
He's making less, honestly, a bonehead plays.
Yeah, for sure. But there was a time there when it was looking really rough for Bortolo in the NHL.
I was texting one of the scouts, and I know this is extreme, but he was going away with Ryan Merkley for a hot minute there, and he's played himself out of that. I didn't want to ask you. I don't know how much time you've got, but I did want to ask you actually. I actually think that Bortolo has been quite good on the power play, especially, and he's been very good at just making that extra effort to keep plays alive. Also, too, he's been really good at connecting plays too. And that my prediction is that next year for the Sharks power play, that I think that their PP1 will be Granlin, Eklund, and Bortolo on it. And can you see that
Granlund, Eklund, Bortolo, and then you got
who knows? I don't know who else.
Zetterlund, I guess maybe.
I don't know. Zetterlund. I think Zetterlund is not he's not a great play connector.
Yeah,
he's good shooter, below average at it. He's a good shooter, but he's not a great shooter too. So I think that Zetterlund probably ends up really honestly like a PP2, even on a not so good Sharks team, or he should be on a PP2, I think. Mm-hmm. And they still don't have a clear PP1 quarterback. But anyway, I don't know.
If they don't bring in anybody else, it's very possible. If they don't add this offseason, because there's just not a lot of offensively gifted players besides those guys. So it's very possible, at least for parts of the year.
I just like, again, how three of them, they are good at connecting plays and making subtle passes. And Bortolo has added that sort of that stick-to-itness, that some determination to keep pucks alive at his size. And that's what obviously Granlin has had his whole career. And Eklund has shown that too. And so I think that sort of combination of elements also too, Bortolo is sort of underrated. I mean to ask him about it, but Bortolo obviously is phenomenal, is very good on faceoffs. Maybe not phenomenal is a little overstating it, but he's actually a very, even at NHL level, I think he's a very good faceoff man already. Yep. And so they've been actually using him sort of as like a secondary faceoff man with Granlin, I believe, secondary. Actually, it might be ahead of him. But so that's sort of another tool that Bortolo has at his disposal that makes him useful on a power play, that he can win you a faceoff. You can hide kind of Bortolo and his this defense and whatever at center on the power play too, and so that's why you can kind of throw him out there. So I don't know, that's just another plus to his game there on the power play.
It's good to see, because again, I was not expecting a lot from Bortolo after he was sent back down, and then I don't know. It seemed like he had a lot to work on, and he did. So somebody, whoever whispered in Bortolo's ear, do it again and keep it up. Or maybe he did it to himself. Who knows? But
yeah,
somebody told him the right way to play, or
maybe
at least,
his dad.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like, when he was in the NCAA, a lot of what he's doing now, he was doing then. And that's why people were, like, excited about him. He was playing hard. He was finishing his checks. He great puck protection. He was on a stacked team, but he was playing a role where he wasn't the guy. And then I think something changed where it seemed like he was just trying to be that a player that he's not in terms of his skill. Not that he doesn't have skill.
But I would say that from the beginning, though, like, and I mentioned this many times, like, he just tried a lot of plays that are college plays.
Yeah.
You know, I think even Graft is doing that to some degree. It's natural, right? Mm-hmm. But it just took too long. It took a while to get that out of him, I think. Longer than I think some people were hoping for, which is why his stock was falling. Including for myself, it was taking a little bit long. It was taking so long that you wondered if it was going to leave his game or not, basically.
Yeah.
Some of the, you know, use that euphemism, the immaturities of his game, right? And so it seems to be leaving it. There's still, it's not perfect, right? He's still a young player. He still makes, still tries stuff he shouldn't try and whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's fine, right? You know, Eklund does that too. But it's a lot less, though. It's not like every game, every period, there's like some play he makes like, oh, what are you doing there? Why are you trying that there? Yeah, it's a turnover out of the way. And that was basically happening. I know it was a really hard stretch for him. Like, it was a tough challenge for him, like a little unfair to judge him on it to some degree. The start the Sharks had, right? And that how bad they started, 0-10-1. And they were getting shit kicked a lot of games, right?
Yep.
And, you know, second line center and... that's a lot to ask. It was a lot to ask of him. And he was doing that kind of like every game at least, where it's like, why are you doing that? That's not, you can't, like, that might work in college, right? Which is maybe why he tries it, right? That might even work in AHL, but
yeah.
And so there's too much of that. And there's a lot less of that. Plus these other things I mentioned, you know, more determination and more inviting of contact and,
yep.
Just a lot of small things he's doing that is allowing his offensive kind of ceiling to accentuates his offensive ceiling. So.
He needs to play that way at a training camp next year.
Oh, sure. Yeah, like this is, like you mentioned, end of season hockey. There's nothing guaranteed here. If we're being like honest from what I've seen on tape, I'm very sure that William Eklund is a building block. I'm not 100% sold on everybody else yet. And that also means Henry Thrun and Bortolo. But they've obviously shown a lot of good tape, I think. So there's a lot of promise with those guys. But yeah, they need to come out. And whoever the Sharks add in offseason, jobs aren't given to a Thrun or a Bortolo. They can lose it just as quickly as they've sort of gained favor in the organization's eyes.
All right, guys, we have a awesome interview with Cam Robinson. I think you guys should stick around for it, especially if you like prospect talk. We will see you all next week. We've talked a lot. So have a good week. Bye. Joining us this week to talk all about Will Smith, some San Jose Sharks prospects, and the 2024 NHL entry draft is Cam Robinson. Cam Robinson is the content director at Elite Prospects and their director of film scouting for EP Rinkside. I think I got that correct. Please welcome Cam Robinson. I guess if we had like a live audience, this is when they would clap. We don't got one, but
thank you. Yes. A warm welcome there.
Real
thank you.
People clapping for you.
Right? Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Thanks for coming on, Cam. I think right now the Sharks could use a little bit of optimism, or Sharks fans could. So it's a good time to talk about prospects. You know, just look to the future.
The only thing to talk about.
Basically. We had originally saw a tweet from you from a few months back during the World Juniors in January that really caught our attention and actually wanted to get you on the show. And we're really grateful that you could join us today to talk about it. Let's start with that
tweet. Yeah, that tweet was hot take. Gabe Perreault is a better player than Will Smith, and Ryan Leonard is demonstrably better than both. So there's your optimism, Sharks fans. But
I like the word demonstrably. That's my end of it's the only thing word, I like.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah.
What you got?
I tweeted that from Gothenburg at the World Juniors, watched a ton of USA, obviously, at that event. I love Ryan Leonard. I think he is just a tenacious, heavy, skillful player who's just going to transition so, so well to the NHL. And like the Caps fans are going to absolutely die for this guy. Mm-hmm. And everybody else will want to try to kill him because he's infuriating, right? And I love that kind of player. I love that player who can back up his skill with that will too. Gabe Perreault, so sublime, so cerebral. I love his hands. I love his touch. And he's kind of an underdog too, right? The skating is not, you know, dynamic, especially East West. But he just makes good on every play because he is so skilled and so smart. And then there's Will Smith, who at some point I'm going to have to give it to him because there's like an art to his ability to find the score sheet no matter what. Like I can watch a game and I can be like, man, Smith is not having a good game tonight. And then bam, you look at the score sheet and it's like, oh, he's got three apples. Like he just always gets on the score sheet. And you know, as we see, he just led the NCAA in scoring as a freshman. Yeah. But there's a reason that he's not a Hopi Baker finalist. And it's because he is, I'm not saying he's cheating. He's not getting empty calorie points or anything like that, but he's not the best player on his line. You know, we often won't see two players from one team end up as finalists. I know we did last year, but, traditionally you don't.
Sure.
And, you know, I could make the argument that he's the fourth best player on BC. So, you know, the fact that he was even in the top 10 for the Hobie Baker finalists, I think is maybe even a bit rich for him. Not to say that he's not a good prospect, right? Like he's still, he's a very sublime, silky player. You know, I like that he's added a little bit more heaviness to his shot. The playmaking's always been there. And he just works so, so well with those two other guys too. So I think the real question mark is going to be like, what's he going to do when he doesn't have Ryan Leonard doing all that heavy lifting for him? What's he going to do when he doesn't have Gabe Perreault kind of that gravitational pull and bringing guys over to him to move the puck and open up space? I'm sure he's going to be fine, but opinion hasn't changed too much since,
That was going to be the follow-up. So that you would put the BC freshman trio in terms of like NHL projectability, Leonard, Perreault, Smith, or maybe not even NHL projectability, but maybe like, I don't know, best, or how would you rank them?
I mean, Perreault is still has that hiccup that his feet, right? So we'll see how that translates at this, you know, very moment in college hockey. Give me Perreault over Smith. But, you know, am I going to feel the same way looking at a 5-year projection into the NHL? Maybe not. I do like Smith skating better, which is going to help him. You know, but he is one of these kids that has never run into a wall. And so, you know, I talked to a scout in his draft year and he kind of said like college is often a wake up call for kids when they, you know, they made every team, everything comes easy to them. And all of a sudden they step into college and they're like, oh, snap, I'm playing against 22, 23 year olds. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. It's not as easy. And, you know, this scout said to me, he's just like, it won't be like that for Will Smith. His issue is going to be when he turns pro because he is so good. He's so skilled that he's going to be able to make up for those deficiencies at the college level. So that's what I'm really interested to see is how quickly he can translate into the pro game and adjust without kind of infuriating his coaches too much and burning too many bridges.
Yeah, what I would ask, I wonder about is, I actually see a lot, I don't watch as much as both of you do in terms of the game, because I got to watch this 17-win Sharks team all the time.
Beautiful.
So me, sorry. Right? Your poor eyes.
Thank you. Okay, condolences, anyway, though, I did watch the World Juniors. I did watch the Hockey East. I watched a little bit of that. So I watched the best of Will Smith. And then I did watch the regionals, which the most recent regionals, NCAA regionals. And that was maybe the worst of Will Smith. And so I do get what you're saying in terms of he has a lot of things in his game. He tries a lot of things that are going to get him benched, honestly, in an NHL level. If he did that exact thing, if he doesn't learn, if he doesn't adjust. But the one thing that I've been impressed by when I watch him, and I wonder, and it's the people that I talk to that they emphasize, and maybe why he was the fourth pick ahead of a Leonard and obviously Perreault, who was in the 20s, but is his brain, his hockey brain, that's going to help him sort of navigate at a higher level. And so that's why what I ask you, or I'm wondering, I want to ask you, Cam, because you mentioned Gabe Perreault's a cerebral nature of his game. And for me, when I watch Smith, that's what I see. I see a guy that's trying a lot of stuff that sometimes I think it can be ahead of his teammates and his line mates. And I think that's what people are kind of counting on. That's going to be what is going to carry him over, because like you mentioned, his skating is good, but it's not, you know, he's not, I would say, a great skater. Right. And he's obviously not the biggest guy. And so anyway, what do you think about that part of his game? Just his hockey brain.
You know, I'd probably push back on it a little bit, just because, you know, he is a very skilled player, and you're right. He tries all sorts of things. And I like that. I like that from highly skilled guys, because it's like when you're playing college, it's like now's the chance, right? Junior in college is like, go ahead and try and push the limits, and you're going to make mistakes. But if you're an elite player at that level, you're going to have a lot of leeway from your coaches, right? Maybe you don't do it in the regionals. Maybe you don't do it when you're pushing into the Frozen Four, right? Maybe now is the time to dump and chase a little bit. But, sure. But you know, at the same time, like, just sometimes how he gets lost in the defensive zone, how he can skate himself into trouble on when he's transitioning the puck at times. So those are the things that I look at when I see where I'm like, this isn't a hockey genius. This isn't a guy who reads the play a step or two ahead of everybody else. Not to say that his IQ is poor, but I see those hiccups enough where I'm just like, you know, he needs more reps. He needs more time and more experience to understand like, hey, I can't get away with this. And then it kind of boils down to the skill of working hard. And that's where I can see that lackadaisical where, you know, maybe he does know what he should be doing, but he's just not doing it. And then, so that kind of frustrates me. I did a big film room on him last year. And so I'll do four or five of these a year. I'll pick some fun players, and one of two things happens. Either, you know, because I end up watching like 25 games of these guys, I either come out being like, I love this player, or I come out being like, ooh, this player really bothers me. And Smith ended up as kind of, he bothered me. I came in there being like, this guy's really skilled. This is going to be a fun one. And it, you know, he had a lot of fun clips and everything. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, his complete game bothered me. And so, you know, like I said earlier, at some point I will have to just give him the credit that it's like, he might be a point of game player. He might infuriate his coaching staff, but like, if he's going to jack up 85 points for you, it's like, he's going to be rolling out there 18, 19 minutes a night on first power play and first line. And that's just how it's going to have to be. Not everybody needs to be a two-way monster. Right. So, like I said, I still think he's a premier prospect. You know, he might be the second best prospect you guys have though. Ooh. Behind Quinn Musty.
Whoa.
That's a good thing. Yeah. I like Shakir a lot. Actually.
I was going to, I got one more question about Smith, but then we should talk a little bit about Musty. Cause I like that. I like this plan. My basic interpretation of Smith sometimes is that he kind of gets stuck into this mode where he's looking for Gabe Perreault, where he's looking for exactly where Gabe Perreault is. And he throws the puck to wherever he thinks Perreault is or wherever Perreault's going to be. And it'll be like something like Ryan Leonard gets the puck off the boards, gives it to Will Smith. Will Smith turns, waits, you know, skates it a little bit, and then tries to find Gabe Perreault. And like, I've seen so much more from Will Smith in like juniors, World Junior Championship that like, I feel like there's a lot more there, and he's kind of defaulting to what's been putting up points in the NCAA a lot lately. And I wanted to get your opinion on that take. If you kind of agree.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know, like Shane was saying how, you know, with that intelligence is that like, maybe he's going to, some guys do better at higher levels because they have smarter, more skilled players around them. Right. Sure. And we see that sometimes where they're making plays and their teammates just aren't able to keep up with the thought process and everything. That's not the case here with Smith, because he's playing with two highly skilled players that are like arguably going to be first liners in the NHL themselves one day, top six guys anyways. But you're right. He definitely defers because Perreault is kind of the big brain out there. He's kind of the quarterback, the general a little bit. Leonard's the meat and potatoes who's going to go and get that puck off the wall. Sure, and you're right. And then, but you know, Smith, he works the point on that power play. So technically he's the QB out there, you know, but it's just, it's really going to be interesting how they do apart, right? Because they've been together now for 3 years. They'll probably be together next year for 4 years. You know, it's going to be really, really interesting to see once they don't have that kind of twin connection that the Sedins had, where they were freaks about it and they just never had to separate. These guys, they're all going their different ways. So that's going to be really, really interesting to see. But you know, he will have Musty, and I think that could be a lot of fun long term. Those two guys, because Musty's got a bit of both of Leonard and Perreault in him.
I like the it's going to be interesting because you're betting on like, is there another skill level with Smith that's there, maybe even above Gabe, or you know, at least the skating bit? Like, is there something that's going to take him forward that when Gabe is separated, maybe won't, or maybe just the brain of Gabe, you know, takes him further.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it'll be, yeah. Perreault, I think, is going to have a bit of a harder time getting up to speed in the NHL, whereas Smith, that won't be. It'll be the work ethic. It'll be adjusting his game to the pro level a little bit. But I think that there's so much skill packed in there. Like I said, I don't think a point per game in his, you know, in his peak is out of the question by any means.
Especially on the power play with like dumping power play minutes about him, probably.
Especially if they can win first overall.
I had an extra question about Smith in terms of just if you're looking at it from the Sharks' perspective and why they used the number four pick on him, because in the spot, at that spot, there are obviously a lot of guys. Even though Leonard would have been a kind of a surprise at number four for them, he still was in the range, and also Leonard strikes you as probably a kind of player that my career would like. Obviously, I think that's what a lot of people were saying before the draft. And so I wonder if, and this goes back to my thought of when I watch Smith, that I see the ceiling there, you know, with some of the plays that he makes that do work that I don't see a lot of people can pull off. And then the stuff that is rough is really rough. And it's not, he doesn't play a complete two-way game now. But I think like if you're the Sharks, do you see that the ceiling that ceiling is the highest of those three players, but and the things he needs to iron out are kind of, you think that he'll be able to iron it out like pretty it's realistic that this is a guy that's going to iron out these things. I don't know, just looking at it from Sharks' perspective, you think that's kind of what they're thinking, that this is a guy that again, ceiling is high, and then the rough edges, you smooth them over pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason he went fourth overall, and it wasn't a reach. You know, there was more talented players taken after him. There were safer players taken after him too, sure. Right? Like if you really wanted to go home run, they would have gone Mishkov, right? And dealt with all that headache before getting him over. But he's a more purely skilled player. You know, they could have gone Leonard, who's a safer player and, you know, has maybe not quite as high a offensive upside, but they went and they swung on a kid who they have control of. You know, he's playing in the States. They can have their player reps talking to him and working with him versus Mishkov. And he has a really high ceiling and he plays the middle of the ice. So it's a premier position on a highly skilled player that you can be like, yeah, he is a bit lazy out there at times. Yeah, he can get a little lost or he can toss the puck away without looking or whatever, but look at the flash. Look at what the top end size of this is. You know, it was the same thing with Trevor Zegras when he was drafted, right? He fell to nine purely because it's like he was an exceptional playmaker, but sometimes you'd be like, dude, you just did a spin backhand pass into the middle of the ice to nobody, right? Like right onto the D-man's tape and off they go the other way. And you know, so you're going to take that good with bad, right? In San Jose, I'm sure you see a lot of Zegras too, where he can dazzle. And then all, you know, oftentimes he can also be incredibly frustrating too. I think there's going to be a touch of that with Smith too, but it's justifiable at that spot.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say there's a, not like a significant chance, but a chance of a bust factor with Will Smith too? Like, is there a chance, a world where this doesn't turn out like in a top two center kind of thing for the San Jose?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a world if he shows up and, you know, things don't come easy, and instead of pushing through that wall, he, you know, becomes, you know, frustrated and complacent or pestilent or something like that, then yeah. I don't know him personally. I'm not going to presume any of those things will happen. I assume he's going to be a good pro. You know, if he ends up being a 65 point guy, kind of like Zegras is turning into, you know, I don't think that's a bust, but it's not what you're hoping for, right? You're hoping to get more out of him. But I mean, for the first few years, I think that'd be a success. And then it's like, okay, at 25, 26, it's like he needs to elevate and start to become like, hopefully the guy. And if not, the guy behind the guy, right?
That's kind of the hope, right? That's what San Jose's got to hope for, basically.
Yeah.
So I guess you kind of touched on one comp already. Is Trevor Zegras possibly is like a Will Smith comp or similar kind of like style? Are there any other good comps for Smith and then Leonard and Perreault? Not in terms of like ceilings, but like play style, I guess.
Oh man, I hate comps. So, yeah,
everybody hates comps.
I shouldn't even say Zegras. I've set myself up for this. I don't know. Just like think about the skills that they have,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So Leonard is he's a menace on the wall, and he gets off mm-hmm. and strong, and he's great at the net front. And so pick any player that you like who does that. And Perreault is going to be more of that cerebral playmaking off the wing, right? Like he's kind of like, you know, he's Clayton Keller without the wheels. I would say Perreault, that kind of player, that playmaking winger that everything kind of runs through him.
Yeah, and then Smith is kind of like a playmaking center that possibly puts you a lot of points on the power play, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. PP merchant, for sure.
PP merchant.
Yeah.
All right, one more question about Smith, and I guess probably the top end of the 2023 draft. But who was your pick at number four if you're San Jose?
I think I had Zach Benson in that. It would have been Mishkov. It would have been Mishkov.
Not Mishkov category because I still don't even know if Mishkov talked with them or not, or you know, was willing.
I think he only talked to like three teams, or maybe even one. Like he wasn't interested in going many places. Yeah. No, for sure. But I believe so I would have had Mishkov as the best player on my board.
Mm-hmm.
But Benson at number five would be the most realistic. I was literally just texting with a director of amateur scouting right before this, and we're talking about this year's class. He was asking me about a player. I'm like, yeah, I'll put him here on my list, but if I'm literally making that pick, I'm not going anywhere near him at that spot. And so that was kind of like for a lot of teams for Mishkov. It's like, yeah, great, he's our second best player in the draft, but we're not taking him at five because we need to make sure we get a player.
So a year later then, I assume that you still have Bedard, Fantilli, Carlson in some order, your top three. So you have the number four pick. You still go with Benson, if non-Mitchkov category.
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah, I'm going with Benson still. I love Zach Benson. Yeah,
he's a hockey player for sure.
He's a hockey player. He is a 5'9" hockey player.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. He's a good kid too. Yeah.
Before we jump into the next bit, I got to ask you then, Musty, you're very high on him. So why so high on him?
He's been excellent. He was excellent as a draft eligible too, but there was kind of like some humming and hawing about some off ice stuff there too, that I think contributed to him slipping down a little bit, which probably helped you guys out a lot to get him at that spot. On that Sudbury line, that top line is nasty line. Right.
Yeah.
And he's the best of the bunch. Like he is the guy there. Like we're at ringside there. We're pissed that we put Dvorsky ahead of him on our board.
I still love Dvorsky too, though. I think he does a lot of work on that line too. But
he does. He does. Yeah. And you'll go at, you know, he's a player too. But I think Musty's going to be a hell of a player. And like I said, that could be a really fun partnership, those two together. But, you know, there's a case to be made that Musty is the better player and that will translate a little bit quicker and potentially have a higher ceiling, which is awesome that you pulled two of those guys out of the draft, that you might, you know, have two cornerstones at the end of the day if everything breaks right. But really, really nice jump this year. And that's everything you want to see from a player who jacked points as a draft eligible. Now you want to see him, like, obviously put up a lot more points and really assert himself. And that's what he's done. He's asserted himself as, like, the guy there in the O. And you know, I like him a lot.
So best case scenario, you can see Smith and Musty as first liners. And I mean, that's great. Like a sort of bringing hope. I mean, that's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
All right.
A possibility. Yeah. We won't count our chickens just yet, but they are, they're coming up. You got some eggs anyway.
What I find super interesting about Musty is he's like, I don't know. He was like kind of, I think last year, a little bit more of a like playmaking winger, has a little bit of physicality. This year, it's like he's kind of notched up the physicality and turned more of like playmaker / power forward kind
They've
of thing.
They've told him to do that, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. And
he
the
looks
shot.
Like, in the shot, he looks like a very complete player out of nowhere, which is, and you love that like rocket ship curve, right? Where he's like very good OHL player, now 2-point-a-game player dominating out there.
So. Exactly. I think we had him like 12. On our board last year. So we really liked him too coming in. And that was the writing was a bit on the wall there. It's like, you know, the guy's 6'2", 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Let's see what he can do when he starts to throw that weight around a little bit. Like he could be a power forward. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't shown that too much as a draft eligible. Not enough, anyways, to really justify going super high. And now you look at him in a redraft, he's going top 10.
Yeah. And he had, I think he had mono too, right? Was it mono he had or something like that? I can't remember.
Yeah. Too many.
I'm on too many illnesses class. And injuries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, I love that from us. That's interesting though. They like got him all the way down at 26, 8, whatever they got him at.
26.
Yeah. 26. 26. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What you got, Chang?
Well, let's move into a little bit of the 2024 draft. And of course, Sharks fans have to face the reality of as hard as the Sharks have worked this year, that they may not get the number one pick and that they may drop to two or three, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're rigged, right? So let's talk about that possibility. And in the last mock draft of yours that I saw, Cam, it was in January, I saw that you had a Lindstrom as your number two and a Salayev as your top defenseman. So I'm wondering, of course, a couple months later, does that still hold?
So we just dropped our newest rankings today. I don't know, 20 minutes ago.
Oh, awesome.
So just,
all right.
Yeah. So that just came out. And so of course I got to drop another mock. And so that's already in the back end. It'll come out maybe tomorrow. And I'm sad to announce that San Jose did not win the lottery. They fell to three, boys. And that's where you're gonna end up.
I'm joining Tommy Hurdle in Vegas.
That's where you're gonna go, right? That's the numbers say you're picking three. So get excited for three, San Jose.
Basically.
That's just how it is. The randomizer gave it to Pittsburgh, which is obviously Bettman was working the randomizer that day. I mean, the Penguins are due to have a franchise player, right? They're due.
They don't have any, right? Their
Mount Rushmore is garbage. But if they got two, mm-hmm. I'm probably picking Ivan Demidov. But who knows if he'll talk to them either. I don't know. But, Levshinov, Caden Lindstrom. I'm not as high on Salayev. I think if you walk away from the first round and you have either Demidov, Lindstrom, or Levshinov, that's going to be a big piece, right? Lindstrom I love Caden Lindstrom. I think we're just barely scratching the surface of what this kid is going to become. He is so raw at this point, yet is great foot speed, great playmaking, great shot, makes everybody better, has two-way ability, and just kind of like a physical specimen at this age. And he's played very little like high end hockey. So I think he could be, might be a bit of a slow burn. We look at Quinton Byfield and how it's like the skill and the size and everything was there and the skating. And it's like, oh my God, what's he going to be? And, it seems like he's been in the league forever, but I think he's even 22 yet. And now we're starting to break through. So I think we might see a little bit of that with Lindstrom too. So he might go top five and then you have to wait until he's 22, 23, where you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be amazing. Demidov, he's got another year left. I've been hearing some rumors that the KHL is trying to implement something where they keep their players until they're 25. And so everyone can pray that that doesn't go through. Putin's new homeland rule for the KHL.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Unconfirmed. I'm not reporting that.
Yeah.
I had some contacts in Russia saying that's they're voting on it in a month. So Demidov is
get Demidov with the if Pittsburgh doesn't win a number one, the Sharks can get Demidov with the 13th pick of the draft.
There you go. Yeah, you might actually be able to, but that kid is so dynamic. Like he is, you could make the case that he's the more dynamic offensive player than Celebrini. Celebrini is just a horse. He gallops a little bit like McKinnon. He's got that Jonathan Toews, that JT two-way game baked into his style too. Youngest player in college hockey, the best player in college hockey. Like he is so good, but Demidov is just, he's an animal. It wasn't even fair playing in Russian juniors this year, the MHL, averaging 2 points a game. He's averaging more than that in the playoffs now. It's just a joke that he wasn't in the K or like in the VHL even. So we can't really get a good look at him and we don't get a good look internationally either, so we're really kind of cheated, and that's going to help whoever drafts him. I think if he does slip down to 8 or 9 or 13, it's because of the questions. Could he do it against the KHL? Could he have done it against the best on best at the U20 level? Is he coming over? But yeah, so any of those guys. And then Levshinov at Michigan State is, he gallops as well. That guy's never met a puck he didn't want to rush or a rush he didn't want to join and holler for that drop pass, right? So that guy, he's got a lot of jump to his game. And I think that there is some like two-way defensive style hockey in his in his future too, that he's going to be a good stopper as well. To be a good NHL defenseman these days, you just kind of have to like work hard and have some skill and not be an idiot. I feel like I miss my chance. Like I should have been a D man. I could have worked hard and not been an idiot, but you know, so he's probably going to be a two. You know, Levchenko is probably going to be a number two guy on a decent team. So, you know, you can get something like that, a first line center, a first line winger, a top pairing D-man. I mean, San Jose, you need all of those things. So
yeah.
Don't be too sad if you miss out on Mac.
To be fair, like a mock draft, it may not be your picks, right? It's kind of what you think a team might do. And so, so just to double check on it. So you have Lestrunov as your top defenseman then in your personal sort of rankings. Okay.
Yeah. Salayev's, I probably like my third or fourth defenseman.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you guys want Tyler Myers. It's, probably don't want to take a guy like that.
Tyler Myers in his rookie year only.
Yeah. Wait, that guy couldn't play defense either, right? He just put up like 40 points. Everyone's like, oh, give him the Calder. Yeah.
We love that guy.
He's 18.
He's going to put up a point a game the rest of his defense. Career.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Never happened. Oh.
Never happened. This is his best year at like 31.
So it would... Yeah, I guess that's kind of a good segue. Is where would your number two player go in 2023 behind this like group of players?
Oh, like where would so I have a Demidov at two. Where would I put him?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, behind
five or six last year.
Got it. 2023 was an animal of a draft.
It was like you know, he's behind Mishkov.
Yeah,
and you know, Fantilli and Carlson were. We're animals too, so I don't know. Yeah, probably around there.
Yeah, that's like, actually
great hanging out with Benson.
That's been a debate people have had too, is the Demidov versus Mishkov debate too. Where do you stand on that?
It's Mishkov.
Still Mishkov.
Oh yeah, for sure. And and you know, I think Demidov could get to a similar level, but Mishkov's he's very, very good. There's a reason that he was playing in the K and putting up like a point a game in his draft year, and that Demidov wasn't good enough for them to loan him out to Sochi and do the same. Not to say that if you slid that guy onto a Sochi-style lineup, Kunlin or something like that, he couldn't have put up 25 points in the KHL, but I just don't think he could take over games like Mishkov did.
Interesting. And what's the development plan for Demidov then? Like, is it going to just be the same like loan out, or is he just going to go step-by-step VHL, KHL in a couple of years? What do you think? Tough to say, right?
Well, it's because he only has 1 year left on his deal with SKA. Mm-hmm. Is that they like to like hold their young players down.
Yep.
Obviously. But then they don't want to lose them. Like, you know, Pod Colson played in that organization back in the day. And like he had the same thing where you'd get like 0 minutes. And then when it's in their last year of their deal, then they start to flash him. Then they start to throw him up in the top six. Then they start to give him an opportunity and be like, oh, look at us. We're a championship club. We got all the money. And then, so like right before Pod Colson was drafted, whatever, 10th overall that year, they offered him a 5-year contract extension for big money, like literally on the draft floor. They offered him this 5-year extension, right? So they were working to do that. So it's like, I can't see, they owned Mishkov forever already. So it's like they could loan him out to Sochi and do it again this year because they still got a couple of years. Now he'll be playing back. Scott's going to, you know, let go of probably like 5 or 6 forwards coming up here. So there's going to be an opportunity for Mishkov to step into that top six next year. There's going to be an opportunity for Demidov to be on that team. And I imagine he will be on that team. And at the beginning of the year, it'll piss everybody off, whoever owns him, whoever drafted him, that he's going to be playing 3 minutes a night or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then after Christmas, you're going to see he's going to start to jump up into the top six. He's going to get some top power play time. He's going to start to get some points. There's going to be some success. And then they're going to slide this contract extension in front of him and be like, don't bother going. Don't cross. Go at 22. Look at what Kaprizov did, right? It worked for Kirill Kaprizov. Just hang around for a little bit and then go walk in and be a superstar 100-point guy. We got you. We'll get it. We'll get a couple Gagarin cups with you. And like, it might work. Like he might do it. I don't know. But I imagine that he's going to get an opportunity next year.
Yeah. Rough for a rebuilding club that wants to see their prospects pretty quickly to kind of put that out there. But
sorry.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. Yeah.
No, it's all right. The coach is going to win number one overall. So it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Actually, I'm completely lying. We all know the Blackhawks are winning number one.
Blackhawks are winning number one.
Blackhawks are winning the lottery. It doesn't matter. Life is.
Ugh. Yeah.
All right. I guess any other 2024 guys you just want to shout out that you like, and then we have one more question after that.
I mean, I like a lot of these guys in 2024. Good.
Well, for the Sharks, let's say they do get the Penguins pick Penguins in, at 11. You know, 11, 12, that range. Is there a guy that you like, you know, right there for a
particular? Yeah, Zeke Bouyam, Tidge Ginla, Berkeley Catton. Yeah. You know, those are Zane Parikh. Those are kind of the guys that I really like because they're like super high skilled guy. Tidge has got like, you know, obviously the bloodlines, but the guy's got some feistiness to him. He's got the wicked release. Bouyam is, you know, he's maybe not a top power play guy. Maybe he is. You know, obviously huge point totals there this year, but not probably indicative of what he's going to be at the NHL level. But you know, if he's like your number two offensive defenseman and he's got this like fallback defensive game, really, really like that. Zane Parikh, you know, he doesn't skate like Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, those guys, but he's like, you know, a step or two below that skating, but that offensive mind is really, really big if you're going for an offensive defenseman. Berkeley Catton, kid's got wheels, he's got hands, he's got a shot. He's, you know, the only thing is like, let's get him into the middle of the ice because he's going to have to be Braden Point if he wants to play center at his size. And it's like, can he do that? That's what Point had to do. And now he's a 40, 50 goal guy and everybody wants Braden Point. So, you know, Constant Hellenius, you know, a bit lower on that pure offensive upside, but like super smart. Great habits, pro habits, really close to being NHL ready. Someone that you could be like, there's our number two center long term. So, you know, there's a lot of really interesting players that are going to be hanging around that zone. I think guys like Cole Iserman might be there and you'd be like, okay, let's at that spot. You're like, let's swing on a guy who's maybe going to be a 35 goal man. You know, like another one who's going to frustrate coaches a lot, but you know, he's got that, you know, a separating skill, and that's kind of what you're looking for at that spot. It's like, that's a top line skill. Let's see if we can flesh the rest of his game out. I think that's probably the guys that are, you know, someone will be gone, someone won't get picked yet, but I don't really see Sam Dickinson still being around or Salayev or any of those guys, but you never know on draft day, right?
Right.
You never know what's going to happen.
Ivan Demidov, 11.
Yes. Honestly, like I wouldn't even blink an eye. Okay. I wouldn't even be surprised at all if that happened. That'd be great. Yeah, Lindstrom and Demidov. Now you're cooking.
Well, last one for me is just I'm curious. Love your thought of Musty as possibly being the top Sharks prospect. So anybody else in the Sharks system that you are just you know, really a big fan of?
I mean, Luca Cagnoni's fun.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
God, I'm trying to think about who else is in your prospect pool. You signed Colin Graf. There you go. That's a future.
That's the one.
Oh, actually, fourth liner right there. Yeah. What do you think about Colin?
Oh, Graf, he's fine. Yeah. He could have came out last year, you know, going to Quinnipiac, going the ship there. But, we'll see. The skating is the issue. Great playmaker, great vision off the wall. You know, he's on as a winger, but the foot speed's got to come. And some of those hope plays that he makes, they've improved this year. I think it was a smart move to go back for another season. But, you know, he's either going to be an AHL scorer or he's going to be a bottom six guy. Mm. So nothing too amazing there. But no, I think it's Smith, Musty, Cagnoni, and then, you know, Shakir on the blue lines. Interesting.
Interesting.
You know, he's got some skills, he's got the size, he's got some skating, but he's kind of a big dummy out there. And I said that's what he can't be that when you're a defenseman.
I like Shakir. I think he's really good.
I think he's improved greatly since his draft year. Yes. I think I'll give him that. Yeah. I'll give him that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He did pretty well this year in the AHL. I think he took a few steps for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's gonna be a player. He'll be a player. Mm-hmm. He should be a top four guy, you know, probably.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable.
Better suited on that second pair. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. As a number four. Yeah. Perfect. Right. Like that's great.
Yeah. That's that's it. We don't got any more questions for you. Any, anything you want to plug or say or anything else before we let you go?
Yeah, I got to plug a whole bunch of stuff here.
How much time we got? List them all out.
But no, obviously, you know, just I mentioned we dropped our rankings. So obviously go check those out.
Everything. The Prospects does the best job of anybody out there. Just most thorough. All the guys they have on there, video, all that kind of stuff. Anything you have a question about a prospect. Actually, I saw they wrote something about Colin Graf months ago.
yeah, our NCAA free agent grad. Yeah, look at Sheng, you did the hype for me.
Yep.
And we've got our draft guide. That is like our our flagship product. Every year we spend, we were trying to talk, figure it out this morning. One of someone in marketing asked how many hours go into that draft guide. And we're like, thousands, like millions. I don't know. Like there's like a dozen of us scouts for an entire year writing game reports and then just like actually making the guide. So that's going to be coming out. Like it's, we're not too far from the draft and that'll be big time. So go ahead and get yourself that, that EP premium subscription. You get all the stats, all the articles, all the videos, all the good stuff, man. So come hop on board if you aren't already.
Love it. Thank you so much, Cam.
Appreciate it, boys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah.